you did with your first loop, you're first going to run an extremely powerful language pattern that will allow you to crack the fourth number in your prospect's buying combination, namely their action threshold. The action threshold. By way of definition, the action threshold is the collective level of certainty that a prospect needs to be at before they feel comfortable enough to buy. For example, I personally have a very low action threshold, which means that I'm extremely easy to sell to. Why? Because you don't have to get me to a 10-10-10 on the certainty scale to get me to buy. If you get me to a 7-8-7, that will probably be enough, especially if the purchase is going to resolve a pain that I'm feeling from an unfulfilled need. Here's a perfect example. A few years back, I was walking through an airport in Perth, Western Australia, and as I approached the gate, I heard a loud thwack in the background, which sounded like someone had just hit the living hell out of a golf ball. Sure enough, when I turned towards the sound, I saw a slender young Asian kid with a golf club in his hand in a perfect trophy pose, as if he just finished hitting a 300-yard drive straight down the middle. The kid was standing inside some type of promotional stand that had been roped off, and as I continued towards my gate, I watched him tee up another golf ball on an indoor mat and take a smooth, elegant swing. From where I was standing, it looked like he hit the ball straight through a window, although on closer inspection, I saw that the ball was stuck to the face of the club. As it turned out, some company had come up with a revolutionary golf training system in which they put Velcro on the face of a golf club and on a regulation-sized golf ball that was made of some sort of sponge-like material. So when you took a swing at the ball, it would stick to the face of the club. And based on where it stuck, you could tell whether you were going to hit a hook or a slice. In any event, I watched the kid take a few more swings, at which point I moseyed on over to take a closer look and to get an explanation as to how the thing actually worked. "It's really simple," he said confidently. "Watch, I'll show you." And with that, he put the ball on a white plastic tee, and then he took his stance and proceeded to take a beautiful cut at the golf ball, one that would have easily sent it 300 yards down the center of the fairway. However, when he showed me the head of the club, sure enough, there was the ball, stuck to the face of the club as if it had been glued there. "Look," he said proudly, "I hit this right on the inside of the ball, right there." So that would have been a nice solid draw about 280 yards in the short grass. Then he went on to explain how you could also see if you were hitting the ball too close to the heel or toe, which would help you get rid of the most dreaded of all swing results, the shanks. So I took a few moments to consider everything, realizing the obvious fact that, what with golf being the hardest sport in the world to master, there was a very slim chance that this little contraption could improve my golf swing even one iota. Nonetheless, the sucker in me came shining through, and I asked, "How much does it cost?" "It's only $49, he replied, "and it comes right in the box. You can carry it on the plane with you." "Fine, I'll take it," I muttered. And just like that, I bought it right on the spot, knowing full well that there was virtually no chance it was going to work. But why? Why would I make a decision that seemed to fly directly in the face of my own self-interest? The answer lies with the inner mechanics of how human beings as a species go about making their buying decisions. Specifically, they run parallel movies through their minds. In other words, the instant before you make a buying decision, your brain runs not one, but two separate movies. It runs a positive one, which represents the upside potential in the form of all the wonderful benefits that you'll get to experience in the future if the product turns out to be as awesome as the salesman has cracked it up to be. And it runs a negative one, which represents the downside risk in the form of all the painful things that you'll experience in the future if it turns out that the salesman misled you and the product is a total piece of crap. In other words, what's your best case scenario? And what's your worst-case scenario? Your brain runs both of these movies through your mind simultaneously, but it happens so fast that you don't even realize it. For example, with the golf training system, let's say the salesman had turned out to be a total scam artist and his product was useless. What's the worst thing that could have happened to me if I bought it? Is a purchase of $49 going to put me in the poorhouse? No, of course not. Is it going to make my golf swing even worse? I highly doubt it. Am I going to feel like an idiot for getting taken to the cleaners? No, again, because I spent only $49 on the thing. So what's the big deal? And that's about as negative as I'll go in terms of future pacing my downside risk. However, when it comes to considering the upside potential, well, in that case, I'll really let my imagination go. I'll be saying to myself, well, if this thing can really help me get rid of those dastardly shanks I've been hitting and help me hit a beautiful drive like that skinny little Asian kid, then I can only imagine how great I'm going to feel when I'm sitting in the clubhouse with my buddies after a long round of golf and we've been having a few beers and I'm talking my new and improved golf swing. Now, that's a perfect example of how someone like myself with a very low action threshold will play out a very empowering positive movie without any prompting from an outside force. And while I'll always make it a point to play out the negative movie too, I won't spend a lot of time doing it. Instead, I'll blunt that movie, both in length and intensity, turning it into a shorter and more watered-down version than it probably should be. On the flip side of that question, let's look at someone who's literally the polar opposite of me, meaning someone with an ultra-high action threshold like my father, Max, who is literally one of the toughest buyers on the planet. In point of fact, my father will not buy anything unless he is absolutely certain about all three tens, and that means damn sure of them. There are no miracle golf cures getting sold to him in an airport. In fact, the moment he realized that the kid swinging the golf club was actually selling something, he would be like, who the hell does that kid think he is selling some miracle golf cure? I mean, can't a man walk through an airport anymore without someone trying to sell him something? Besides, what makes this kid an authority on golf? What a set of balls, this kid. What a set of balls. In consequence, if you get someone like my father to an 8-8-8 on the certainty scale, then there's simply no possible way they'll buy. Similarly, they won't buy at an 8-10-8 or an 8-9-8. The only way they'll buy is when you get them to a 10-10-10, and they're damn sure of it. This is why we often find ourselves in situations where we're trying to close someone whose responses indicate that they're in a state of absolute certainty for all three of the tens, yet we still can't get them over the line. Instead, they keep hopping from objection to objection, saying things like, let me think about it, or let me call you back, or send me some information, and so on. So, what do you do in these cases? The answer is you lower your prospect's action threshold right on the spot. In total, there are four ways to do this. The first way is to offer your prospect a money-back guarantee. This is a very simple, very common strategy that's used in countless different industries. It's especially prevalent on the internet, where the chance of not getting what you thought you were paying for is significantly higher than in the offline marketplace due to the presence of a large number of overseas vendors and unlicensed resellers. The second way is to offer your prospect a cooling off or rescission period. This is a contractual feature that allows a prospect to make a binding decision now, but then reverse that decision for up to 5 business days. This is common in certain regulated industries like real estate and vacation sales. While rescission periods are typically mandated by either a state or federal regulatory agency, that doesn't change the fact that they can still be used as a very powerful closing tool. The third way is to use certain key phrases that paint a picture that runs counter to the worries and concerns that a typical high action threshold buyer ruminates on. Some examples of this are, I'll hold your hand every step of the way. We pride ourselves on long-term relationships. And we have blue chip customer service. And the fourth and most effective way by far is to use a very powerful language pattern that allows you to temporarily reverse a high action threshold prospect's parallel movies, causing them to abandon their strategy of running an unrealistically long negative movie and an extremely abbreviated positive one. In other words, at the end of the day, the difference between my father and me is that, as a low action threshold person, My beliefs are such that when I'm faced with making a buying decision, I'll run a very long and very empowering positive movie and a very short and not very toxic negative one. Conversely, as a very high action threshold person, my father's beliefs are such that when he's faced with making a buying decision, he'll run a very long and very toxic negative movie and a very short and very uninspiring positive one. The way you go about reversing these movies is by using the aforementioned language pattern to rewrite their respective scripts along the lines of a low action threshold individual. Here's an example of what you would say to Bill if he were still sitting on the fence as a result of having an extremely high action threshold. Bill, let me ask you an honest question. What's the worst that can possibly happen here? I mean, let's say I'm wrong and the stock actually goes down a few points and you lose 2,000 bucks. Is that going to put you in the poorhouse? No, Bill replies a bit grudgingly. Exactly, you continue. Of course it won't. And on the upside, let's say I'm right, like we both think I am, and the stock goes up 15 or 20 points, like we both think it will, and you make 15 or 20 grand. I mean, it'll feel good and everything, but it's not going to make you the richest man in town now, will it? No, definitely not, replies Bill. Exactly, of course it won't. It's not going to make you rich, and it's not going to make you poor. But what this trade will do is serve as a benchmark for future business. It'll show you that I can put you into the market at the right time and take you out as well. So why don't we do this? Since this is our first time working together, why don't we start off a bit smaller this time? Instead of picking up a block of 10,000 shares, let's pick up a block of 1,000 shares, which is now a cash outlay of only $30,000. Of course, you'll make a bit less money as the stock trades higher, but your percentage gain remains the same, and you can judge me on that alone. And believe me, Bill, if you do even half as well as the rest of the clients in this program, the only problem you're going to have is that you didn't buy more. Sound fair enough? And then you shut up and wait for a response. Now, if the prospect doesn't quickly answer, don't feel compelled to fill the conversational vacuum and start jabbering away and talking through your clothes. You're at that magic moment now when, in perfect sequence, you've summed up the very best benefits, you've reduced the energy expenditure, you've lowered the action threshold, and you've asked for the order in just the right way using your tritonal closing pattern. So be quiet and let the client answer. If you do, you'll find that about 75% of all the prospects who ultimately buy from you will do so right here. In essence, by taking these high action threshold buyers and, for a few fleeting minutes, lowering their action thresholds, you can step through that window and close what are about to become your most loyal customers. Indeed, if there's one thing about high action threshold prospects that makes them more than worth the extra effort it takes to close them, it's that they make excellent long-term clients. They're typically great tippers, they don't mind paying top dollar, and they almost never leave you for another salesperson, even if they get offered a better deal. They're basically so happy to have finally found the salesperson who is able to break through their limiting beliefs and earn their trust that they'll stay put under almost any circumstance. My father was a perfect example of this. Growing up, I watched with fascination as he dealt with the same few salespeople to fill virtually all his needs, and he never questioned them about anything, about price, delivery times, competing products, the options or features they recommended, how much of a particular item he should buy, and what warranties he should take out. The bottom line is that he viewed each one of them as an expert in their respective fields, and he trusted their judgment on every level. Ironically, it's these ultra-loyal, highly lucrative, high-action threshold prospects like my father who end up slipping through the fingers of virtually all salespeople other than natural-born closers and those who have studied the straight-line system. To them, these otherwise ultra-tough prospects are nothing more than routine closes that had to be taken a little bit further down the straight line as a result of their beliefs, which require the salesperson to crack the fourth number of their buying code, lowering their action threshold. running additional loops. So here we are, two loops down, and how many to go? It's a good question, isn't it? I mean, how many loops should you actually run? 3 loops? 4 loops? 5 loops? 10 loops? 20 loops? Before I fully answer that, let me start by saying that for those prospects who haven't bought yet, you're definitely going to run at least one more loop. After all, you still have one number left to address in their buying combination, namely their pain threshold. In essence, people who are feeling significant pain tend to act quickly. Conversely, people who are in denial of their pain tend to act slowly. In consequence, there's actually an inverse relationship between the amount of pain a prospect is feeling and their action threshold. In other words, in the same way that we can lower a prospect's action threshold by running a language pattern, there are also natural everyday occurrences that can impact it as well. And when it comes to lowering the action threshold, the primary occurrence is how much pain they're currently feeling. Here's a perfect example of how this plays out in real life. When I was 9 years old, my dad was driving us down to Washington, D.C. in the family car as part of a 2-week summer vacation that was going to take us all the way down to Miami Beach, Florida. We were somewhere around Delaware, about 2 hours from home, when the water pump blew out. And all at once, the car started rattling and the lights on the dashboard were flashing and there was smoke coming from under the hood. And my father was muttering curses under his breath as he pulled over to the side of the road. Now, what you need to understand here is that my father was extremely particular when it came to who could touch any of his possessions. And that includes basic everyday items like his shirts, his ties, his wristwatch, his camera, and the very hair on his own head, which has been cut by the same barber for the last 30 years. But of all his possessions, the one he was most particular about, by far, was his car. Nobody, and I mean nobody, was allowed under the hood of my father's car except for one very special man, Jimmy at the local Sunoco station. Anyone else was strictly off limits. However, on that particular day, with his family stuck on the side of the road, 120 miles from home, with the sun going down and the temperature dropping, what do you think my father did? The answer is he went to the nearest gas station he could find and said to the owner, "I don't care what it costs, I need you to fix my car right now." The bottom line is that at that very moment, the pain he was experiencing from the possibility of his family being in danger caused his action threshold to drop straight through the floor, and just like that, he was transformed into one of the easiest buyers in the world. This is why you introduce pain in 2 spots. First, during the intelligence gathering phase, you want to identify where your prospect's pain lies and, if necessary, amplify it to ensure that your prospect listens to your presentation from that perspective. And second, you're going to reintroduce that pain right now, at the beginning of your 3rd loop, using a language pattern that sounds something like this. Now, Bill, I know you said before that you're worried about your retirement in terms of your Social Security not being able to pay for your living expenses, and so forth. And then you're going to raise the level of pain by asking your prospect what they think is going to happen with the situation if they fail to take action to fix it. Using an empathetic tone, you would say, "Bill, let me ask you a question. Given how things have been deteriorating over the last 12 months, where do you see yourself in a year from now? Or even worse, 5 years from now? Are things going to be even more intense in terms of all the sleepless nights and the worrying?" And make sure that you maintain a very sympathetic tone throughout the entire pattern. If you do, 9 times out of 10, your prospect will say something like, "At best, I'll be in the same spot I'm in right now, but it'll probably be a lot worse." And that's your chance to say in the "I care and I feel your pain" tonality, "I get it, Bill. I've been around the block a couple of thousand times now. I know that these things typically don't resolve themselves unless you take serious action to resolve them." In fact, let me say this. One of the true beauties here is that, and now you're going to quickly resell the 3 tens using a concise yet very powerful consolidation of the tertiary language patterns that you created for each of the 3 tens, which will focus almost exclusively on the emotional side of the equation, using the technique of future pacing to paint your prospect that all-important, pain-free picture of the future, where he can actually see himself using your product and getting the exact benefits he was promised and feeling great as a result of that. And from there, you're going to transition directly into a soft close and ask for the order again. Remember, with the exception of your first loop, in which you deflected your prospect's initial objection, your loops are always going to start by answering whatever new objection your prospect hopped to, using one of the dozens of proven rebuttals in the accompanying online resource, albeit with a tacit understanding that, no matter how awesome a rebuttal might sound, the only thing it's going to do is earn you the right to speak more. It's what you say after the rebuttal that's going to persuade your prospect to close. Go to www.jordanbelfort.com/rebuttal to read about proven rebuttals. Now, at this point, if the prospect sticks to the same objection, then you should thank them and let them move on with their life. After all, you don't want to be a high-pressure salesman and keep running loop after loop after loop after loop. In terms of the maximum number of loops you can run, from a theoretical perspective, the number is infinite, but I strongly suggest that you don't push the envelope like that. The reality is that you'll know by your prospect's demeanor when it's time to move on. If they start getting edgy or they're laughing overtly because they feel pressured, then you've gone too far. In fact, as soon as you sense that your prospect is feeling even the slightest bit pressured, you immediately want to pull back and say something along the lines of, "Jim, please don't misconstrue my enthusiasm for pressure. It's just that I know that this is truly a perfect fit for you." And now you have two options. Option one is to use this as an opportunity to loop back into the sale yet again and give it one more shot, paying very close attention to your tonality and body language, as well as the tonality and body language of your prospect. In your case, you want to steer clear of any unconscious communication that speaks of either absolute certainty or bottled enthusiasm, and focus on utter sincerity and "I feel your pain." In the case of your prospect, you want to focus on both their conscious and unconscious communication. And if either one signals that they're feeling pressured or perturbed in the slightest way, then I would immediately transition to option number two. Option two is to use this as an opportunity to get back into rapport with your prospect so you can end the encounter on a high note, while also setting up the possibility for a callback. In this case, you would say something like, "Jim, please don't misconstrue my enthusiasm for pressure. It's just that I know this truly is a perfect fit for you." Then you'd change your tonality to one of utter sincerity and add, "So why don't we do this? Let me email you the information you're looking for," or whatever the prospect's last objection was, "and then give you a few days to look through everything and also to discuss it with your wife," or whatever their secondary objection was. If there was none, then you just omit this. "And then we can speak again next week after you've had a chance to really get your arms wrapped around everything. Sound good?" And from there, you can decide whether you want to set it up so that you're supposed to call the prospect back, or if the prospect is supposed to call you back. Which path you choose depends on too many factors for me to give you a definitive answer without knowing the specifics of your industry. But if there were only one factor I could consider above all, it would be what percentage of your callbacks ultimately end up buying. If the percentage is very low, then for the sake of time management, I would leave the ball in their court and wait for a callback, thereby assuring that you only talk to prospects who are truly interested. On the flip side, if the percentage of callbacks that ultimately turn into clients is very high, then I would keep the ball in your court and instigate the callback yourself. Just one final point with this, and that's to never forget the ethical side of the equation, which is that you do not want to use pain to disempower people. You want to use it to empower people by helping them make good buying decisions so they can have the things that they truly need. Final thoughts. When it comes to the real-world application of the straight line system, the most common mistake salespeople make is that they tend to be far too rigid when it comes to modifying the system's core language patterns to fit seamlessly into their industry. For example, the vast majority of the language patterns I've covered will be a perfect fit for salespeople in industries like insurance, financial services, education, solar products, vitamins, network marketing, and pretty much any product or service where the salesperson initiates the sales encounter. However, if you're working in a retail store selling TVs or clothing or sporting goods or computers or just about anything else, then obviously it's not going to make much sense to ask a prospect if the shirt he just tried on makes sense to him. So in cases like that, where the initial pattern doesn't fit very well, all you need to do is adapt it to your current situation. For example, if you worked selling TVs in an electronics store, then you could say to your prospect, "So what do you think? Is that what you were looking for? Is this up your alley?" As opposed to saying, "Does this TV make sense to you?" Which sounds totally ridiculous. Remember, when I first invented the straight line system, it was designed for selling $5 stocks to the richest 1% of Americans by cold calling them on the telephone. Since then, I've taught the system to millions of people in just about every industry you can imagine. And with just a bit of tweaking of the core language patterns, the results they've achieved have been truly staggering. The point I'm trying to make is that when it comes to applying the straight line system to industries outside the one it was originally designed for, the key to success is to be as flexible as necessary while you're creating your core language patterns, using your common sense as your guiding light to make sure that everything fits. The straight line system is an immensely powerful persuasion system that can literally change your life in a matter of days. I've seen it happen all over the world in countless industries. People who had never achieved anything even close to resembling success are suddenly achieving things that they themselves had never dreamed possible. And they're living a life that's far more empowered than in their wildest dreams. It all starts by mastering the art of persuasion using the straight line system while maintaining a clear understanding that you will never sacrifice your ethics and integrity along the way. After all, success in the absence of ethics and integrity is not success at all. I had to learn that the hard way, but you don't, especially with this book as your guide.
Way of the Wolf, Straight Line Selling, Master the Art of Persuasion, Influence, and Success, was written and read by Jordan Belford. It was recorded at Total Access Studios, with editing and post-production by Like 2,000 Pounds. The associate producer was Jennifer Lopes. Way of the Wolf, Straight Line Selling, Master the Art of Persuasion, Influence, and Success was produced and directed by Travis Tun. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Way of the Wolf, Straight Line Selling, Master the Art of Persuasion, Influence, and Success is available in print from North Star Way.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.